Blog Talk Radio.
Now, tonight, we're going to review our past 23 shows, describing what we covered in each one. Now, we've tried, during these presentations, to give a full picture of magic from the first century up to the and through the modern era. All of these shows, of course, are archived, and you can listen to them at any time. Now, they're actually an informal course in Hermetic magic and its related arts. What I'd like to do is I'd like to get through this list of shows and point your attention to each one of them, and then we'll open up for calls after that point, after we get through this catalog of shows here. And then after we take some calls and talk about a few more things, we want to discuss our associate member program, its concept and its goals. And as I said in the abstract, tune in and find out where we've been and where we're going. Okay, so we started off back in April 15th, Income Tax Day, with Introduction to Hermetics. And this was an introduction, this show was an introduction to Hermetic and Solomonic ceremonial magic as taught and practiced by the Church of the Hermetic Sciences and the Order of the Temple of Astarte. Now, we outlined Hermetic philosophy and its history. We drew a distinction between Hermetic magic and witchcraft and Satanism. And we discussed the principles of invocation, that's calling down the angels, and evocation, calling up the spirits, and the aspects of astrology, Kabbalah, and alchemy that bear upon Hermetic magic. We described the inner workings of the magical visionary process and explained the hypnotic and subjective nature of this phenomenon while we maintain the inner spiritual reality of the human imagination. And that was the introductory show and set the tone for the whole program. Now, on April 22nd, 2010, that was on a Thursday too, we did the Dark Mirror Evocation and Angelic Invocation. Now, this Thursday, the Hermetic Hour presented a lecture by Pope Runyon on Dark Mirror Evocation and Angelic Invocation. That was first delivered at a symposium sponsored by Paul Clark's Fraternity of the Hidden Light in 2002. Now, this talk revealed the philosophy, the techniques, and the effects related to these grand operations of ceremonial magic, how to summon spirits and call down the angels. Now, I discussed this subject in depth and gave the psychological, spiritual, and traditional background behind our most dynamic form of modern urban shamanism. Now, this talk was frankly directed toward those who are sincerely interested in this subject. It was somewhat dense with details, facts, techniques, and practical instructions. Now, I said that it might be a little heavy for the fluffy bunnies, but if you want to outgrow your fluff, you know, tune in and find out how the boys and girls in the dim-lit, blue-painted garages do it. This was not done off the cuff. This was a paper, of course, that I delivered And so it was rather dense with detail, but it's certainly worth listening to. Now, on the April 29th, 2010, we started Prince of Cotton, The Magic Bow, part one of three. And the abstract goes, for this show, Bo Grunion will read the first of three installments of his historical novelette, Prince of Cotton, The Magic Bow. Now, this is a modern rendition of an ancient Canaanite legend that dates from the time of Melchizedek, that's 1500 B.C., and is based on the scribe Eli Malek's version written down on clay tablets before Moses brought the Hebrews out of Egypt. The OTA performs four seasonal ceremonies each year based on these ancient Canaanite pre-biblical myths. Prince of Cot is a great way to become familiar with Canaanite Phoenician mythology, which has so much bearing on the magic of old King Solomon and his Phoenician ally, King Hiram of Tyre. It was an exciting story full of magic, mystery, and wonder, like a tale from the Arabian Nights, and I tried to give it a dramatic reading. Now, Prince of Cot, we did this in three sections. Part of it, Prince of Cotton, The Magic Bow, part two of three, came on the air on May 6th. And then part three of three was May 20th. And the Hermetic Hour featured the conclusion of Prince of Cotton, The Magic Bow, preceded by a brief synopsis of the story and followed by a brief commentary. And then we took calls and answered any questions about Prince of Cotton or magic in general. And the last quarter of the hour, we read excerpts from various articles that would appear in the forthcoming seventh ray, which still is not yet, the green ray that will be published sometime this summer. Well, summer's gone, we still haven't got it out, but it's almost ready to go. Now, let me say this about Prince of Cot, seeing as how we devoted the better part of three shows to it. Prince of Cot is a painless and easygoing way to get familiar with Canaanite mythology. And Canaanite mythology, the basis of our seasonal ceremonies, and it's what lies behind Solomon's magic. Solomon was a follower of the goddess Astarte, and King Hiram of Tyre, who helped him build the temple, was a follower of El and Baal and Astarte. And so the Masonic legend, of course, has them all united in this effort. So what we're looking at here is the real, if there ever really was a King Solomon, and some people doubt there was, I don't doubt it, I'm sure there was, and a Hiram of Tyre, this mythology was where their magic was based. And the temple was built to El, it wasn't built to Yahweh. I know that Prince of Cot seems like fiction, but it really isn't fiction at all. It'll give you a look into the origins, the mythological origins of the magical process, and I very much recommend that it be studied. Now, May 27th, we did one on the magical, on the Masonic conspiracy. Now, this week, the Hermetic Hour dealt with the fascinating subject of Masonic occult conspiracy connections. And we discussed the actual and the fanciful history of Freemasonry in relation to occultism, radical politics, and the New World Order. And we went from the Illuminati through the French Revolution, with the Morgan Affair, the Palladian hoax, Fabian socialism and Marxism, and we revealed just what the great secret of Freemasonry really is and why Masons are hated and feared by the fanatics and true believers of the world's great religions and the followers of radical political philosophies. Unfortunately, that all of these people that hate Masons have managed to get a lot of good people who are not particularly radical into believing their foolishness. Now, we briefly reviewed Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol, and we asked if you had a friend who believes that the Masons are secret agents of some shadowy world government or satanic conspiracy, to please ask them to tune in. And we took a couple of calls, but this is a highly charged subject. Now, I'd like to say this about that particular program. Masonry has, on the internet, Masonry is pictured as being the most conspiratorial and satanic and anti-human conspiracy that you can imagine. This stuff is just so far out that it's incredible. But what we revealed in this show is that Masonry in England and in the United States is based upon the philosophy of John Locke, whereas Masonry in Europe on the continent is based upon the philosophy of Rousseau. And then Rousseau and Helvetius were the philosophical underpinnings of the so-called Illuminati. And the Illuminati were a European phenomenon, and they were real, and they were conspiratory. They were the origin of the Communist Party and Marxism and all that got started with the Illuminati. But George Washington wouldn't let those people into the United States. He despised them. And our philosophy over here is based on John Locke, not on Rousseau. And so American Masons and British Masons are not the conspiratorial Illuminati type people which you think they are, and that was what we were trying to get across. Now, on June 3rd, we did The Secrets of the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript, second edition. That's a book we just came out with, beautiful library edition. It's beautiful pebble grain blue leatherette cover with a gold stamp, and in this book we discuss the origin, the history, and the content of the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript, that mysterious and controversial document that was the foundation of the Victorian era's Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. Now, we covered the subject in depth, explaining Win Westcott's creation of Fräulein Sprengel. She was the fictitious Rosicrucian adept who was actually a pseudonym for two real women on the occult scene. One of them was Alexandrina Mackenzie, and the other one had just passed away, Anna Kingsford. We will examine the manuscript itself and the secret knowledge it reveals about the Kabbalah, the Tarot, and the Tree of Life. And we recounted the notorious Horus affair, which nearly destroyed the Golden Dawn, and we showed how it was related to the Cipher Manuscript. And we briefly discussed Aleister Crowley's connection to the Golden Dawn and the difference between his Thelemic philosophy and the Rosicrucian philosophy of the Golden Dawn. Now, of course, relates to a publication of ours, which is presently available on Amazon, and which is certainly the last word on the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript and everything connected with that. There are a couple of other publications in the Cipher Manuscript, but this is far and away the best one. Now, on June 10th, we delved into Enochian magic. And the Hermetic Hour presented an introductory lecture on Enochian magic. Now, I've been practicing this system for 40 years, and I have some personal insights into its effectiveness, how it works, and what you can expect from it. Now, we began with a brief history from John Dee and Edward Kelly and Elizabethan times through the Golden Dawn's amplifications of the system, Crowley's contributions, and the present-day developments, including the work of my colleague and sometimes mentor, Lon Milo Duquette. And we discussed the terrestrial victory system and how it became the modern system of the 38ers. And we recounted some Enochian visions, and we even did a little Enochian, so you could close your eyes and see what kind of visions you might see in your mind's eye. Now, this was, I think, a good introduction to the subject, and we practice the 30-aether system in the OTA. It's not our primary system, but we do the 30-aethers, and this is an ascension up the. Well, some people think it's an ascension up the spheres of the tree of life. That's one way of looking at it. It's an ascension up into higher planes. However, all these planes in the entire Enochian system is essentially elemental, and one should certainly realize that. Now, on June 17th, we did the Crater of Poa. And the Hermetic Hour presented a lecture on the 1770 Crater of Poa system of magical initiation. And we briefly described this 18th century German and later French recreation of an ancient Alexandrian mystery tradition on a Masonic initiatory model. Now, the Crater of Poa was a structural outline for a magical order that preceded both the OTO and the Golden Dawn Cipher Manuscript by 100 years. Now, we discussed the original authors, what they were trying to accomplish, and the considerable influence their creation had on subsequent magical traditions. I recounted how I literally stumbled into a French version of the system in 1963 and later adapted it to the fledgling OTA in 1969. I carried the story on into the 1970s and the 80s and the 90s as we found out more and more about the system, and we expanded our program along the lines laid out in the Crater of Poa. Now, this is, for those of you who are really interested in the history of magic and in the initiatory structures, this is one you really ought to listen to, because the Crater of Poa has made a lot of contributions, to the Martinists, to Amort. John Yarger lifted a whole... He did a whole degree in his Rites of Memphis, which was literally a condensation of the Crater of Poa. Paul Christian's History and Practice of Magic has this French one-degree version. That was the one we originally got into. This is absolutely fascinating, and this gave us a structure that, as I said, it's completely independent of the OTO and the Golden Dawn, although we do use Golden Dawn correspondences. I mean, that's the best stuff available, so why not use it? Okay, original air date for the next one, June 24th, was Hermetic Yoga. And we presented a lecture on Hermetic Yoga, and we discussed the chakras in the etheric plane of the Hindu tantric system, and the variations in Tibetan Tantra. The Kundalini in Hindu, Tibetan, and Taoist procedures was discussed, and we then differentiated between the etheric Hindu system and our astral arrangement that follows the lightning flash on the Western Tree of Life. The philosophical importance of the Western arrangement was compared to the Eastern system's alchemical correspondences. And we discussed the origin of our system from the Golden Dawn's middle pillar exercise to its full development now used by the OTA in its magical operations. The mantras and the affirmations were demonstrated and explained. And I'd like to mention a little bit about this. I first had a kind of a revelation on this thing crossing the campus at Northridge when I was studying for my eventual master's degree, and I was walking across the campus one day, and all of a sudden it struck me like, wow, the psychic centers, the chakras go right by the lightning flash. And of course I was familiar, this was an extension of the middle pillar, the Golden Dawn's middle pillar exercise. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but Paul Case had developed a an alchemical kind of system in which he was, Paul Case, as those of you probably know about the system, he's much more concerned about the paths of the Tree of Life than he was about the spheres, and because Terra was the center of his system. And so he constructed his psychic center system based upon the paths and their correspondences. So he ended up with something that did not go by the lightning flash. In other words, it didn't descend down the tree the way the emanations did and then go back up. It went all over the place and did different things. Now, it did have some relation alchemically to the Hindu chakra system too, but these were etheric systems. So what we have is the astral system that follows the philosophical line. And you know, I worried for a while when I discovered I worried that, oh my gosh, you know, how are we ever going to get this in Case's system to work together? Well, and no, it's not a problem, because that's etheric. Ours is yetziric. Ours is philosophical. Theirs is hermetic philosophical. Theirs is chemical, alchemical. And you can make a link if you want to, but I found out that our systems being used actually quietly, very quietly, by the Steinerites, and also it's being used by, and it was used by Johann Gitchell. And so our system is very, very powerful and really, really good. And also I discovered that when I took my Tibetan training for a year, I discovered that Tibetan tantric systems, they have a different chakra arrangement for every deity they do. And so this idea that the Hindu system is set in concrete is just not true. So our system, our hermetic yoga system, is really, really good. It's very, very effective. And we haven't outlined an earlier version of it, although we made some improvements in it. Some earlier version of it is outlined in the Book of Solomon's Magic, which is also available from Amazon. On July 1st, we did the Hermetic Kabbalah. And first we defined what Kabbalah or Q-A-B-A-L-A-H or Q-A-B-B-A-L-A-H or C-A-B-A-L-A or Q-B-L, what it is. And then we presented a very simplified version of the basic principles. It was a sort of a Kabbalah for dummies. And then we moved on to what we can do with it. That was the fun part. And I once said that hypnosis is the tactic of the magician and Kabbalah is his strategy. Now, we can define Kabbalah as a software program, an operating system, or a schematic for the mind, which enables the left brain, the rational part, to access and control the right brain, which is the intuitive part. Now, we got down to the magical nuts and bolts, and we defined the four dimensions, the Tree of Life, the cube of space, and what the astrological connection is, where the angels and demons live, and how we can use the Kabbalah to communicate with them. And this, I wanted to explain a little more on this. We have we've converted our Hebrew alphabet into Phoenician characters, and we even added two characters. We added a zero character crater at the beginning, and we added a supernumerary omega. We doubled tau, so omega is 800, and we added that at the end. And this gives us a 24 letter magical alphabet, which, by the way, is something that you really need to have, because then you can apply it to the zodiac. And you can also apply it to the four elements. The 22-letter Hebrew alphabet was a deficiency, and even Gershom Scholem admitted that. So we went to this Phoenician, which we romantically refer to as the Atlantean alphabet, although, as I say, it's basically Phoenician equivalents. This works out beautifully for magical formulas and it's just an absolutely wonderful and powerful system. We also don't use the Hebrew Tetragrammaton because that's proprietary to them, and we use the three mother letters and Tau in the 22 letter analog, and the three mother letters and Omega in the four in the 24 letter alphabet. So we have a generic tetragrammaton, which is very, very powerful and is not necessarily proprietary to the Hebrew system. So this is, in other words, this is a classical pagan Kabbalah, more of a Hermetic Kabbalah. Now, on July 8th, this was call-in night, and the emphasis was on your call questions on any subjects that we covered on the preceding broadcasts. And so I asked you to keep the subject brief to the point. And between the calls, I was reading material from the forthcoming issue of the Seventh Ray. And the following Thursday, July 16th, I said we would discuss the work and the works of European Magus Franz Barden. Now, on July 15th, the Hermetic Hour presented a lecture on the magic of Franz Barden, the 20th century European alchemist and magician. Now, Barden was the author of three books on magic and one semi-autobiographical novel. His Eastern-style methods of training owed much to the Raja and Tantric yoga systems of the East, and they've had a considerable influence on modern Western practice. We discussed each of his three books in sequence, where his information came from, and what his philosophy was. And you learned about fluid condensers, volts, elementals, magnetic and electric fluids, and magic mirrors. His step to P.B. Randolph was mentioned, and he didn't necessarily steal from P.B. Randolph. It's just that P.B. Randolph had several of Barden's ideas, and along with the OTO's ninth degree, long before Barden came up with them. Essentially, the Bardonian aspect of that was the fluid condensers. You'll find that P.B. Randolph has more elaborate fluid condensers, actually, than Barden has. Although Barden was really more of an alchemist in many ways than a magician. Now, we discussed the origins of his myriads of spirits, the way he derived his sigils, and the unique concept of the Kabbalah that he had. Now, I got, after the program, I received from one of our European contacts, I received a English translation of Emile Sanjar's breakdown of where Barden got his spirits from, which I had mentioned. I had mentioned this on the show, but this detailed it even more, and I appreciate getting that. Emile Sinajar, he decoded the Barden's spirits, and you should actually check out that on the internet and find Sinajar's decoding of some of Barden's spirits, and that's a good thing to have. Now, we discussed Barden's background as a professional hypnotist, an alchemist, and a healer, and we compared this to his mundane life and his problems. And, of course, he was overweight, and he was a chain smoker, died after eating a bacon sandwich, but he was human. And he was still the master, and we should appreciate him all the more for the faults that made him human. Now, I said at the end of this, I said, tune in and find out why Simon, King of the Witches, kept saying magnetic electric, magnetic electric, magnetic electric, while he was having fun with the DA's daughter. Well, of course, Simon, King of the Witches was a 1971 low-budget film about magic in the Hollywood area in Southern California. And some people say that I was the original model for Simon in the movie. And I don't know. I don't know whether I want to take that on or not, because Simon lived in a storm drain and ended up killing a policeman and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure I want to take that on. But still, Simon was the fellow that wrote the screenplay, certainly had done his homework. And so Simon used Bardonian techniques. He used Crowley Randolph type sex magic. This is a good movie to see. Simon, King of the Witches. I've got it out on DVD. Now, on July 22nd, we had Collins on Barden, and we discussed the Picatrix. Now, Hermetic Hour would answer call-ins questions on our last show, which we did. And in between calls, we discussed the oldest, most famous, or infamous of the magical grimoires, The Aim of the Sage, more properly known as Picatrix. Picatrix, not pick up sticks and other books of dirty tricks. This once forbidden tome, at least it was forbidden in English, is now available translated from both the Arabic and the Latin medieval texts. I want to say right now that this Latin translation that John Michael Greer and Christopher Warnock have come up with the Latin text is the best one to get, I think, because, and it's cross-referenced to the Arabic, too. It's the best one because this is the one Agrippa and Trithemius and the European magicians all had at their right hand. Now, we discussed the Iranian Sabaean contribution, those are the wizards of the Arabian Nights. And the Spanish connection, well, it came originally from Moorish Spain. And if all this sounds like Greek, well, it was that too, because this, you get the Arabic version of Greek philosophy. And so we said, tune in and find out how to get scorpions to sting themselves and how to grow smart plants from human skulls, along with some profound hermetic philosophy and astrology that fights back. Well, the Picatrix is a very fascinating mixture of dark black witchcraft and of the highest levels of hermetic philosophy and marvelous elective astrology techniques. It's the be all and end all for the astrological magician, and of course, astrological magic is the highest form, the highest form of magic. And so, this Picatrix is a book you just have to have if you're going to do this sort of thing. Now, on July 29th, we did a show called Beyond Lemuria. Now, host Paul Grunion discussed the background behind the 2007 cult film Beyond Lemuria, which he wrote and produced for CHS Productions. Beyond Lemuria is a feature-length science fiction occult drama that was filmed in the ancient ruins of Nan Madol out in the Pacific, inside the OTA temples in Pasadena and Silverado, and high up on the slopes of Mount Shasta, and deep in the lava caverns under America's Holy Mountain. The film features leading occult figures in the roles of the Mount Shasta avatars. Juan Milo Duquette takes the role of Hermes Trismegistus. Paul Clark plays the Master Jesus. Merrick Hamer is Philos of Atlantis, and our own Frater Solomon of Dark Bearer of Magic is Samyaza, the fallen angel from the Book of Enoch. Now, the dark side of the drama involves the Shaver Mystery, a 1940s revelation of a secret underground realm of Atlantean Lemurian survivors who possess the super scientific weapons of the ancients, and these evil Darrows offer their secrets to the black magicians in the film, while the white magicians, played by the same actors, seek the wisdom of the ancients up on the Holy Mountain. Beyond Lemuria is available on DVD from Amazon and is occasionally shown to select audiences, while most recently at Hot Louie's Bar and Restaurant in L.A.'s Chinatown for a group of college art students. And, actually, I have to admit that back when I was 16 years old, reading Richard Shaver's wild and fanciful science fiction stories about the ancient astronauts living underground, and Shaver was way ahead of Sitchin and way ahead of Van Däniken and all the rest of these people on the idea of ancient astronauts, and I just really, when I was 16 years old, I just thought this was great stuff. And so I think that's one of the first introductions I had to occultism. So I thought when we had to come together to make a dramatic film, why not use Shaver down in the caves, these great caverns under Mount Shasta, and then we take Mount Shasta's course. I climbed up the mountain and had a beautiful vision myself, and I thought we will be transcendental up on top of the mountain, which it was. So we dug into the history of all of the people, the mystics on Mount Shasta, and so this is a very interesting film. It's got a lot of information in it, and all the avatars and the Enochian fallen angels and all of them, they all speak Enochian. So if you're up on Enochian and you watch the film, you can translate the Enochian, because there was quite a bit of it in the film. Now, on August 5th, we did Magical Path Workers. And the Hermetic Hour featured a talk by myself on magical path workings. Now, these are hypnotic guided tours of the astral plane, inner plane projections, intended to introduce the magical students to deeply significant symbolism from mythology and traditional occult correspondences. The Kabbalistic Tree of Life is the roadmap. The central idea here is that the student confronts the symbol or archetype and receives a personal message, personal knowledge that he or she might not obtain by conscious study. Now, these are astral initiations. And we discussed the history of this type of working from the Golden Dawn Sphere Group onto the Eastern version that influenced the OTA's pathworking system. That's Gurpal Singh's system, which eventually went the other way. That became the origin of Ekankar, too, in case you're wondering. And we took you on a mini path working so you could experience some of the effect. Now, this is an important part of traditional magical lodge instruction, and it's not too well understood. This attention point aspect that Gurpal Singh really perfected is not very well understood. But so this, and this is also shown in our video of the Rites of Magic. Now, on August 13th, we decided that it was time to get to the really transcendental aspect of this, and we did the Why of Magic. Now, the Hermetic Hour led a discussion on Hermetic philosophy from ancient Alexandria through the Renaissance and on into the modern era. And we looked at the early work of Empedocles and Pythagoras, the Pomander and the Asclepius, and the Emerald Tablet of Hermes Trismegistus, and the Chaldean Oracles. And we considered the Gnostic connection and how the Kabbalah arose from Greek, Assyrian, and Gnostic roots, and how it joined with Hermeticism in the Renaissance. And we established why astrology was so important to the magical art. And most importantly, we looked for the great secret of Hermetic Kabbalistic philosophy. And this is the why of magic, and this is the holy grail that we search for. This is the reason we dedicate our lives to an art that destroys the fools and makes the wise immortal. And I said, I doubt you'd ever hear anything quite like this before. Tune in and we'll open the pathway to enlightenment. Now, I think we really did, and we did carry out our promise on that. And you have to listen to that program to get that, because it takes some explaining. But I'd like to mention right now, if I can't get it across to you in that 1 hour, then if you read Peter Kingsley's 600-page reality book, that he'll do it for you by the time you get to the last few pages. Now, the next week, this was August 19th, we had call-in night, and that went in, along with that, it was What About Crowley? Well, the Hermetic Hour had call-in night led and monitored by me, and as a main topic, we discussed the magical attributes and detriments of the naughtiest man in the world, Aleister Crowley. And, of course, this topic was specifically chosen to get you to call in. We expected a spirited response, especially for Thelemites, which we didn't get, by the way. And I read selections from Crowley's poetry, The Wizard's Way, by the way, and reviewed the recent Crowley movie. It's just called Crowley. It's really a lot of fun. Crowley does a lot of terrible things in the movie, but he does them with tongue-in-cheek and the kind of things that Crowley would have liked people to think he would have done, but he really wouldn't have. And also Somerset Maugham's silent film Somerset Maugham's novel and the silent film The Magician. And that very good, too. And we discussed the Book of the Law in relation to the Enochian and Key of the 30 Aethers, and we offered some droll Crowley anecdotes. Now, we said if you don't like Crowley, we'll defend him, and if you do like him, we'll attack him, and all of which he would enjoy immensely. And so we launched into it. Now, and obviously later on, we got one comment back that somebody who didn't like it didn't like the way I read Crowley's poetry. You know, I don't understand why it has velvet soft, the wizard trod to the sabbath of his god. You know, and he crucified a toad in his basilisk abode. What's wrong with that? I like that. I enjoy Crowley. I really do. And he made some great contributions to magic. In fact, he almost copyrighted the term magic with a K. Crowley brought magic into the modern world. We owe a lot to Crowley. It's just that, you know, well, the third chapter of the Book of the Law is a little hard for me to swallow. But Crowley, you can't get away from Crowley. He was quite a character, and like I said, very enjoyable to read. Now, on August 26th, following right along, we did Kenneth Grant, Austin Osmond Spare, and H.P. Lovecraft. And I said the Hermetic Hour would present a discussion on the dark side of Hermetic magic, and we explored the works of 20th century's most erudite and accomplished diabolist, Kenneth Grant, and his Typhonian Gnosis, tracing his sources through Crowley and the occult artist Austin Osmond Spare, and back to the fin de siècle descendants of the late 19th century, and we touched on Grant's adoption of the Cthulhu mythos of fantasy writer H.P. Lovecraft and his fictional Necronomicon, and we read deliciously evil snippets from Grant's work, and our own lovingly crafted satire, Beyond the Nostrils of New It, from the forthcoming Seventh Ray. I say this really ought to be our Halloween show. And tune in and we'll descend into the tunnels of Set. I really, really enjoy Kenneth Grant. He's very creative. He's a lot more creative than the present-day OTO. The OTO just, you know, runs Crowley over and over and over again like a broken record. Grant took off and really went with it. And he has this Typhonian Gnosis, is trans-Plutonian, and it really stretches your imagination. It's very nostalgic, and I'm working my way and enjoying working my way through Grant's last book, which cost me a bloody fortune, called The Ninth Arch, And Grant is he is really a character that you can't avoid. Kenneth Grant, even though he's a dark sider, but oh boy, he's fun to read. And so now, as a contrast, on September 2nd, we did a tribute to Fred Adams with Joe Carson, the leader of Fair Ferry. Now, on that date, I was joined by Joe Carson for a discussion about the life and work of surrealist painter, poet, neo-pagan philosopher, and ceremonial magician Frederick Adams. Now, Fred was my master, by the way. Fred, with his consort Lady Svetlana, founded Periferia in 1969. Periferia was the first and still the most elegant expression of goddess-worshipping, nature-focused, neo-pagan religion in America. Joe Carson's recently released film, Dancing with Gaia, features Fred giving instruction in landform yoga and also displays his marvelous artwork. Fred Adams was certainly a master magician. He and Svetlana recreated the ancient Greek Eleusinian mysteries and perfected a joyous round of 9 seasonal ceremonies. And there would be no OTA seasonals without the original inspiration of Periferia. Now, I cannot emphasize just how really, really beautiful this Periferian experience was for those of us who went through it, knew Fred, and how it still is. We're still preserving it. And I have on Amazon for you, if you can find it, I'm trying to get the catalog straightened out, the new edition of Fred's 9 Royal Passions of the Year art folio. And they have it classified as a single issue magazine or something like that. It's the new edition and of 9 Royal Passions of the Year by Frederick Adams. Please, please look that up and get it. Now, on September 9th, The Art of Alchemy. And we presented a discussion on the Hermetic Art of Alchemy, its history, its mystery, and its philosophy. Now, I said I don't claim to be an alchemist, and so this presentation was based on my extensive notes from a seminar on the ancient art taught by the late Hans Ninzel, who was considered one of America's foremost alchemical masters. Our call-in guest was Art Kuntgen, author of Alchemy Revealed, and at least I consider the foremost alchemist of Southern California. I said, tune in and help us find the Philosopher's Stone. Well, Art called in, and we really got into it. And Art may very well have found the Philosopher's Stone. I think it's very possible that he has. So those of you who are really interested, you should get a hold of Art Kuntgen and ask Kunkin. It's Art Kuntgen, and it's Art Kuntgen on the internet, and you'll find Alchemy Revealed, The Secret of the Philosopher's Stone. That's something you really ought to check into. Now, on September 16th, we did magical astrology. And we presented a discussion that we began with the prehistoric origin of the zodiac and the age of Taurus. That's bullseye astrology. We explained how this began, the symbolism of the zodiacal signs, the labors of Hercules. And we delved into Alexander's emphasis on Aries and the establishment of Hori astrology, the Hori astrology doctrine by Ptolemy. We touched on the Orphic Hermetic doctrine of the soul's descent and return, which our psychic center systems, of course, is based on, and the geocentric model still used in Hermetic magic, the mansions of the moon, the decans, and astrology's influence in geomancy, tarot, the tree of life, the Kabbalah, and alchemy, and the concept of elective astrology. Now, I said, tune in and get prognosticated. Pun there. This harks back to our Picatrix show, and I think that you should understand that astrology really is the underpinnings of virtually all of the Hermetic arts. Now, on September 23rd, we did angel magic. Hermetic hour provide a discussion on angel magic, good spirits too, with the emphasis on crystal balls, crying techniques, training equipment, and talisman construction and charging. We discussed the recent books recounting Thomas Rudd's 17th century work in the field, and we related some experiences we had in the circle doing this work, and this was call-in night. And I said, tune in and get the urgerated or thaumaturgified, and I hope you did. Anyway, that's the one on the on our Almadel system. Now, that's what we have to offer in the archives, and that forms, in a way, it forms a little informal short course in hermetic magic. Gives you the perspective, puts it all in perspective. Now, we're open for call-ins, but keep it brief because I don't have much time, and I've got other stuff to cover here. So if you call in, it's call-in number is 347-857-1830. That's 347-857-1830. Now, let's discuss our associate member program and what we're going to do with it and where it's going. This is going to be a program for those of you who are not or outside the Los Angeles area or the Southern California area and who would really want to enjoy our experience. Now, you understand this is not initiatory, but it is an associate member program. And it's going to have a yearly membership. And you'll have a yearly donation of $10, and you'll get a membership agreement and an application form, and all of this, and you'll be in this with us. We're going to send you a certificate that's suitable for printing, and a yearly ID card. And one of the really good deals about this is that once you're an associate member, you get all of our materials, all of them, for 50% off. That's 50% off cover price, and we'll pay shipping. And that's quite a good deal. Now, we'll have a quarterly newsletter, which is going to come out. That'll be for members only. And you get this, you get a membership kit when you join up, that includes a booklet explaining the whole program, and you're going to get your certificates, your ID card, and we're going to give you, for your initial membership, a copy of The Rites of Magic. This is a 90-minute video. You've seen parts of it on YouTube and parts of it on our magic website that we have, but then we're going to give you this $25 video, Introduction to the OTA, and that'll be free with your membership kit. Now, this is what you need to do. You need to go to Hermetics at socal.rr.com. I'll spell that. Hermetics at socal.rr.com. That's our present email address, or the address that we will be at. Now, you must be 18 years of age to join. And what we want is a physical address. You have to send us a physical address. Don't send your $10 with your letter now. We'll send you the form, and you can send it in with that. We need your physical address or your P.O. box, your full name, your full real name, not your alias or screen name or anything like that. We need a short biographical sketch on why you want to be a member. Now, you send this to us, and you can send it by mail, too, if you want to me. That's address it to me at P.O. Box 403 Silverado, California. 9-2-6-7-6. Or, as I say, go to hermetics@socal.rr.com. And as I said again, you should be 18 years of age, and we need your physical address and your name, your real name, and your physical address, your P.O. box, and a short biographical sketch and why you want to be a member. And then we will send you your membership application. And then you can fill that out and send it back with your $10. And, of course, we'll review it. And then, I don't know, there won't be, I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't be accepted. But I mean, we reserve the right, of course, you know, to review it. And then, upon acceptance, we'll send you out your membership kit. Of course, if we don't accept it, we'll send you your $10 back. But we'll send you out your membership kit, which includes the booklet, the video, the rights of management, your certificate, and your ID card. Okay, so that's the Associate Member Program. Now, what's the Associate Member Program going to do? Well, the Associate Member Program, we hope, and we believe the Associate Member Program will eventually grow into real groups and establishments of the Church of the Hermetic Sciences and people who really want to do this work. And really want to do this work along the lines we've laid it out. And we want to help you in every way possible, every way that we possibly can to get you going and get you to doing this work, to building equipment and enjoying all of the things that we've developed and been able to help you, be able to show you and help you out. This is our purpose, and this is what we want to do. We want to get you folks involved, those of you who really want to be involved, and give you the benefit of all of this. And I think, and as far as the Hermetic Hour is concerned, we're going to continue, and it's going to be open to people who are non-members, of course. We'll have special programs for those, you know, special programs and other sites for our website. You'll have a password for the Associate Member website, and you'll have a password to get in there. We'll have special programs for members only. But we'll continue with the Hermetic Hour. And next week, the Hermetic Hour, we're going to have a lot of fun next week, because next week the Hermetic Hour is going to discuss magical fiction and magical films. And we're going to have our master list. We're going to discuss our master list of novels all the way back from the turn of the last century all the way through, all the way up from Dion Fortune all the way through Philip K. Dick. We'll be discussing magical novels that we recommend that you read and films. And films like Cocteau's Orpheus, and we'll be discussing wonderful magical books like the Saragossa Manuscript, and the Saragossa Manuscript, and we'll discuss Clark Ashton Smith, and Abraham Merritt. Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun. So we'll see you next week, and get ready next week to jot down these books and catch up on magical imagination. And so the Hermetic Hour is signing off. Good magic, and we'll see you next week.